Her immune system is going berserk. Dr. Erlon leaned into the microphone. Med, please draw another blood sample, quickly. The girl jolted to attention at the sound of his voice. Fatine joined him at the window. We haven't given her the antidote yet.
No.
So how? Dr. Erlon bit down on a thumbnail to tame the rush of giddiness.
I need to go get that first blood sample, he said,
backing away, almost afraid to take his eyes from the cyborg girl.
When all the microbes have disappeared, have her taken into Lab 4.
Lab 4 isn't set up for quarantine, said Lee.
Indeed, she won't be contagious.
Dr. Erlon snapped his fingers, halfway out the door.
And perhaps have the med untie her.
Untie? Fatine's face contorted with disbelief. Are you sure that's such a good idea? She was violent with the med droids, remember?
Lee folded his arms.
She's right. I know I wouldn't want to be on the other side of that fist if she got angry.
In that case, you have nothing to fear, said Dr. Erlon. I'll be meeting with her in private.
Chapter 10. Cinder started when the mystery voice filled the room again, demanding another blood sample from the sacrificial lamb. She glared at the mirror, ignoring the med droid as it prepared a new needle with robotic efficiency. She fought down a gulp, moistening her throat. How long before I get the pretend antidote? She waited, but there was no answer. The android clipped its metal claws around her arm. She flinched at the cold, then again, as the needle poked into her sore elbow. The bruise would last for days. Then she remembered that tomorrow she would be dead. Or dying. Like Peony. Her stomach twisted. Maybe Audrey was right. Maybe it was for the best. A shudder racked her body. Her metal leg clanked hard against her restraints. Maybe not, though. Maybe the antidote would work. She filled her lungs with the cool, sterile air of the lab and watched as the holograph on the wall mimicked her. Two green dots lingered by her right foot. The medroid pulled out the needle and used a cotton ball to stopper the wound. The vial filled with her blood was set into a metal box attached to the wall. Cinder thumped her head against the lab table.
I asked you a question. Antidote? Any day now? You are going to at least try to save my life, right?
Med, said a new voice, a female. Cinder snapped her head around to look at herself in the mirror again. Disconnect the patient from the monitoring machines and escort her into lab room 4D. Cinder dug her fingernails into the tissue paper beneath her. Lab room 4D. Is that where they sent you so they could watch you die? The android snapped shut her head panel and removed the nodes from her chest. The heart rate machine flatlined.
Hello? Said Cinder. Could you tell me what's going on?
No answer. A green light flickered beside the android sensor, and the door opened into a room's white-tiled hallway. The medroid wheeled Cinder's exam table out of the lab, past the mirror. The corridor was empty and smelled of bleach, and one of the table's wheels squeaked in time with the android's treads. Cinder craned her head but was unable to meet the medroid sensor.
I think I have some oil in my calf if you'd like me to fix that wheel.
The android remained silent. Cinder pressed her lips. Numbered white doors slid past them.
What's in lab room 4D?
Silence. Cinder drummed her fingers, listening to the crinkle of tissue paper and the wheel that was sure to give her a twitch. She caught the sound of voices somewhere far away, down another corridor, and half expected to hear screams coming from behind the closed doors. Then, one of the doors opened, and the android pushed her past a black 4D. The room was almost an exact duplicate of the other, but without the observation mirror. Cinder was wheeled alongside another exam table, upon which sat a familiar pair of boots and gloves. Then, to Cinder's surprise, her shackles released with a simultaneous whistle of air. She jerked her hands and feet out of the opened metal rings before the android could realize it had made a mistake and bind her again. but the android showed no reaction as it retreated to the hall without comment. The door clanked shut behind it. Shivering, Cinder sat up and searched the room for hidden cameras, but nothing struck her as obvious. A counter along one wall held the same heart rate machines and ratio detectors as the other had. One net screen to her right sat blank. The door, two exam tables, and her. She swung her legs over the side and snatched up her gloves and boots. While lacing up her left boot, she remembered the tools she'd stashed in her leg before leaving the junkyard, what seemed like eons ago. She unlatched the compartment and was relieved to find it hadn't been raided. With a steadying breath, she grabbed the largest, heaviest tool she had, a wrench, before closing the compartment and tying off her boot. With her synthetic limbs covered and a weapon in hand, she felt better. Still tense, but not as vulnerable as before. More confused than ever. Why give her stuff back if they were going to kill her? Why take her to a new lab? She rubbed the cool wrench against the bruise on the eye of her elbow. It almost looked like a spot from the plague. She pressed on it with her thumb, glad to feel the dull pain that proved it wasn't. Again, she scanned the room for a camera, half expecting a small army of medroids to stampede the room before she could destroy all the lab equipment. But no one came. The hallway outside betrayed no footsteps. Sliding off the exam table, Cinder went to the door and tested the handle. Locked. An ID scanner was inserted into the frame, but it stayed red when she flashed her wrist before it, so it must have been coded to select personnel. She went to the cabinets and fiddled with the row of drawers, but none opened. Tapping the wrench against her thigh, she turned on the net screen. It blazed to life, a holographic image jumping out at her. It was her again, her medical diagram spliced in half. She swiped the wrench through the holograph's abdomen. It flickered, then returned to normal. Behind her, the door whooshed open. Cinder spun, tucking the wrench against her side. An old man in a gray newsboy cap stood before her, holding a port screen in his left hand and two blood-filled vials in the other. He was shorter than Cinder. A white lab coat hung from his shoulders, as it would a model skeleton. Lines drawn into his face suggested he had spent many years thinking very hard over very difficult problems. But his eyes were bluer than the sky, and, at that moment, they were smiling. He reminded her of a child salivating over a sticky bun. The door shut behind him.
"Hello, Miss Lynn."
Her fingers tightened on the wrench. The strange accent, the disembodied voice.
"I am Dr. Erland, the leading scientist of the Royal Lethemosis Research Team."
She forced her shoulders to relax.
"Shouldn't you be wearing a face mask?"
His gray eyebrows lifted.
"Whatever for? Are you sick?"
Cinder clenched her teeth and pressed the wrench into her thigh.
"Why don't you sit down? I have some important things to discuss with you."
"Oh, now you want to talk," she said, inching toward him. "I was under the impression you didn't care too much about the opinions of your guinea pigs."
"You are a bit different than our usual volunteers."
Cinder eyed him, the metal tool warming in her palm.
"Maybe that's because I didn't volunteer."
In a fluid motion, she raised her arm, targeted his temple, envisioned him crumpling to the floor. But she froze, her vision blurring. Her heart rate slowed, the spike of adrenaline gone before her retina display could warn her about it. Thoughts came to her, sharp and clear, amid the syrupy confusion of her brain. He was a simple old man, a frail, helpless old man, with the sweetest, most innocent blue eyes she'd ever seen. She did not want to hurt him. Her arm trembled. The little orange light clicked on, and she dropped the wrench in surprise. It clattered to the tile floor, but she was too dazed to worry about it. He hadn't said anything. How could he be lying? The doctor didn't even flinch. His eyes beamed, pleased with Cinder's reaction.
Please, he said, fanning his fingers toward the exam table. Won't you sit?
Chapter 11. Cinder blinked rapidly, trying to dispel the fog from her brain. The orange light in the corner of her vision disappeared. She still had no idea what had caused it. Maybe the earlier shock to her system had messed with her programming. The doctor brushed past her and gestured at the holographic image that jutted from the net screen.
You no doubt recognize this, he said, sliding his finger along the screen so that the body spun in a lazy circle. Let me tell you what is peculiar about it.
Cinder tugged her glove up, pulling the hem over her scar tissue. She scooted toward him. Her foot bumped the wrench, sending it beneath the exam table.
I'd say about 36.28% of it is pretty peculiar.
When Dr. Erland did not face her, she bent and picked the wrench up. It seemed heavier than before. In fact, everything felt heavy. Her hand, her leg, her head.
The doctor pointed to the holograph's right elbow. This is where we injected the letamosis-carrying microbes. They were tagged so that we could monitor their progress through your body.
He withdrew the finger, tapping his lip.
Now you see what is peculiar?
The fact that I'm not dead and you don't seem concerned about being in the same room with me?
Yes, in a way. He faced her, rubbing his head through his wool hat. As you can see, the microbes are gone.
Cinder scratched an itch on her shoulder with the wrench.
What do you mean?
I mean they are gone. Disappeared. Poof.
He exploded his hands like fireworks.
So, I don't have the plague?
That's correct, Miss Lin. You do not have the plague.
And I'm not going to die?
Correct.
And I'm not contagious?
Yes, yes, yes. Lovely feeling, isn't it?
She leaned against the wall. Relief filled her, but it was followed by suspicion. They had given her the plague, but now she was healed? Without any antidote? It felt like a trap, but the orange light was nowhere to be seen. He was telling her the truth. No matter how unbelievable it seemed.
Has this happened before?
An impish grin spread across the doctor's weathered face.
You are the first. I have some theories about how it could be possible, but I'll need to run tests, of course.
He abandoned the holograph and went to the counter, laying out the two vials.
These are your blood samples, one taken before the injection, one after. I am very excited to see what secrets they contain.
She slid her eyes to the door, then back to the doctor.
Are you saying you think I'm immune?
Yes, that is precisely what it seems. Very interesting, very special.
He gripped his hands together.
It is possible that you were born with it. Something in your DNA that predisposed your immune system to fight off this particular disease. Or perhaps you were introduced to letamosis in a very small amount sometime in your past, perhaps in your childhood, and your body was able to fight it off, therefore building an immunity to it which you utilize today.
Cinder shrank back, uncomfortable under his eager stare.
Do you recall anything from your childhood that could be connected to this?
He continued.
Any horrible sicknesses, near brushes with death?
No? Well, she hesitated, stuffing the wrench into a side cargo pocket.
I guess, maybe, my stepfather died of letamosis 5 years ago. Your stepfather? Do you know where he could have contracted it?
She shrugged. I don't know. My guardian, Audrey, always suspected he got it in Europe when he adopted me. The doctor's hands trembled, as if his clutched fingers alone were keeping him from combusting.
You're from Europe, then?
She nodded, uncertainly. It felt odd to think she was from a place she had no memory of.
Were there many sick people in Europe that you recall? Any notable outbreaks in your province?
I don't know. I don't actually remember anything from before the surgery.
His eyebrows rose, his blue eyes sucking in all the light of the room.
The cybernetic operation?
No, the sex change.
The doctor's smile faltered. I'm joking.
Dr. Erland reassembled his composure.
What do you mean when you say you don't remember anything?
Cinder blew a wisp of hair from her face.
Just that. Something about when they installed the brain interface, it did some damage to my, you know, whatever, the part of the brain that remembers things.
The hippocampus,
I guess.
And how old were you?
11.
11.
He released his breath in a rush. His gaze darted haphazardly around the floor, as if the reason for her immunity was written upon it.
11, because of a hover accident, was it?
Right.
Hover accidents are nearly impossible these days.
Until some idiot removes the collision sensor, trying to make it go faster.
Even so, it wouldn't seem that the few bumps and bruises would justify the amount of repairs you had.
Cinder tapped her fingers against her hip.
Repairs? What a very cyborg term.
Yeah, well, it killed my parents and threw me through the windshield. The force pushed the hover off the maglev track. It rolled a couple times and pinned me underneath. Afterwards, some of the bones in my leg were the consistency of sawdust. She paused, fiddling with her gloves. At least, that's what they told me. Like I said, I don't remember any of it.
She only barely remembered the drug-induced fog, her mushy thoughts.
And then, there was the pain. Every muscle burning. Every joint screaming. Her body in rebellion as it discovered what had been done to it.
Do you have any trouble retaining memories since then? Or forming new ones?
Not that I know of, she glared. Is this relevant?
It's fascinating,
Dr. Erland said, dodging the question. He pulled out his port screen, making some notation.
11 years old, he muttered again.
Then,
you must have gone through a lot of prosthetic limbs growing into those.
Cinder twisted her lips. She should have gone through lots of limbs, but Audrey had refused to pay for new parts for her freak stepdaughter. Instead of responding, she cast her eyes to the door, then at the blood-filled vials.
So, am I free to go?
Dr. Erlon's eyes flashed as if injured by her question.
Go? Miss Lynn, you must realize how valuable you've become with this discovery.
Her muscles tensed, her fingers trailing along the hard outline of the wrench in her pocket.
So, I'm still a prisoner. Just a valuable one now?
His face softened, and he tucked the port out of sight.
This is much bigger than you realize. You have no idea how important... no idea of your worth.
So what now? Are you going to inject me with even more lethal diseases to see how my body fares against those?
Stars, no, you are much too precious to kill.
You weren't exactly saying that an hour ago.
Dr. Erland's gaze flickered to the holograph, brow furrowed as if considering her words.
Things are quite different than they were an hour ago, Miss Lynn. With your help, we could save hundreds of thousands of lives. If you are what I think you are, we could... well, we could stop the cyborg draft to start with.
He settled his fist against his mouth.
Plus, we would pay you, of course.
Hooking her thumbs into the belt loops of her pants, Cinder leaned against the counter that held all the machines that had seemed so threatening before. She was immune. She was important. The money was tempting, of course. If she could prove her self-sufficiency, she might be able to annul Audrey's legal guardianship over her. She could buy back her freedom. But even that insight dulled when she thought of Peony.
You really think I can help?
I do. In fact, I think every person on Earth could soon find themselves immensely grateful to you.
She gulped and lifted herself onto an exam table, folding both legs beneath her.
All right, just so long as we're clear, I am here on a volunteer basis now,
which means I can leave at any point I want to. No questions, no arguments.
The doctor's face brightened, eyes shining like lanterns between the wrinkles.
Yes, absolutely.
And I do expect payment, like you said. But I need a separate account, something my legal guardian can't access. I don't want her to have any idea I've agreed to do this, or any access to the money.
To her surprise, he didn't hesitate.
Of course.
She sucked in a steadying breath. And one other thing. My sister. She was taken to the quarantines yesterday. If you do find an antidote, or anything that even holds promise as an antidote, I want her to be the first one to get it.
This time, the doctor's gaze faltered. He turned away and paced to the holograph, rubbing his hands down the front of his lab coat.
That, I'm afraid I cannot promise.
She squeezed her fists together.
Why not?
Because the Emperor must be the first to receive the antidote.
His eyelids crinkled with sympathy.
But I can promise your sister will be second.
Chapter 12. Prince Kai watched through the glass as a medroid inserted an IV into his father's arm. Only 5 days had passed since the Emperor had shown the first signs of the blue fever, but it felt like a lifetime. Years' worth of worry and anguish rolled into so few hours. Dr. Erland had once told him of an old suspicion that bad things always came in threes. First, his android Nancy had broken before she could communicate her findings. And now his father was sick, with no hope for survival. What would happen next? What could be worse than this? Perhaps the Lunars would declare war. He cringed, wanting to take back the thought the second he had it. Khan Torin, his father's advisor and the only other human allowed to see the Emperor in such a state, clapped a hand on Kai's shoulder.
It will be all right, he said,
without emotion, in that peculiar way he had of reading another person's thoughts. Kai's father moaned and opened swollen eyes. The room was quarantined on the 7th floor of the palace's research wing, but the Emperor had been made as comfortable as possible. Numerous screens lined the walls so he might enjoy music and entertainment, so he might be read to. His favorite flowers had been brought in droves from the gardens, lilies and chrysanthemums filling the otherwise sterile room. The bed was dressed in the finest silks the Commonwealth had to offer. But none of it had made much of a difference. It was still a room made to keep the living separate from the dying. A clear window separated Kai from his father. He was squinting up at Kai now, but his eyes were empty as glass.
Your Majesty, said Torin, how are you feeling?
The Emperor's eyes crinkled at their corners. He was not an old man, but the illness had aged him quickly. His complexion was yellow and pallid, and black and red splotches stippled his neck. His fingers lifted from the blankets, the closest thing he could manage to a wave.
Is there anything you need? Torin asked. A glass of water? Food?
An escort 5.3? Kai suggested.
Torin cast the prince a disapproving glare, but the Emperor wheezed a small chuckle. Kai felt his eyes misting and had to look away, down at fingertips pressed into the windowsill.
How much longer? He said, quiet so his father wouldn't hear.
Torin shook his head.
Days, if that.
Kai could feel Torin's gaze on him, understanding but also harsh.
You should be grateful for the time you have with him. Most people don't get to see their loved ones when they're taken away.
And who wants to see their loved ones like this? Kai looked up. His father was struggling to stay awake, his eyelids twitching.
Med, bring him water.
The android rolled to the Emperor's side and lifted his backrest, guiding a glass of water to his lips and wiping away the dribble with a white cloth. He did not drink much but seemed refreshed when he had sunk again into the pillows.
Kai.
I'm here, Kai said, his breath fogging the glass.
Be strong. Trust.
His words broke into a cough.
The medroid held a towel to his mouth, and Kai caught a glimpse of blood against the cotton. He shut his eyes, measuring his breath. When he opened them again, the medroid was filling the IV with clear liquid, something to ease the pain. Kai and Torin watched as the Emperor sank into a motionless sleep, like watching a stranger. Kai loved him, but couldn't quite connect the sick man before him with the vibrant father he'd had a week ago. 1 week. A shudder ran through him, and Torin squeezed his shoulder. Kai had forgotten his hand was there.
Your Highness.
Kai said nothing, staring at his father's chest as it rose and fell. The fingers on his shoulder tightened briefly, then fell away.
You are to be Emperor, Your Highness. We must begin to prepare you. We've already put it off too long.
Too long? 1 week. Kai pretended not to hear him.
As His Majesty said, you must be strong. You know I will help in any way I can.
Torin paused.
You're going to be a fine leader.
No, I'm not. Kai tugged a hand through his hair, pulling it back from his scalp. He was going to be Emperor. The words rang hollow. The true Emperor was there, in that bed. He was an imposter. I'm going to talk to Dr. Erland, he said, stepping back from the glass.
The doctor is busy, Your Highness. You shouldn't keep distracting him.
I just want to ask if there have been any developments.
I'm sure he will tell you immediately if there are.
Kai set his jaw and fixed his gaze on Torin, the man who had been his father's advisor since before Kai was born. Even now, standing in the same room with Torin made him feel like a child, gave him a peculiar urge to be unruly. He wondered if he would ever get over that.
I need to feel like I'm doing something, he said. I can't just stand here watching him die.
Torin's eyes dropped.
I know, Your Highness. It's hard for all of us.
It's not the same, Kai wanted to say, but held his tongue. Torin turned away from him, facing the window, and bowed his head.
Long live the Emperor.
Kai repeated the words, whispering around the dryness in his throat. Long live the Emperor. They were silent, leaving the visitor's room and walking down the hallway to the elevators. A woman was waiting for them. Kai should have expected it. She was always nearby these days, when she was the last person on Earth he wanted to see. Sybil Mira, head thaumaturge to the Lunar Crown. Exceptionally beautiful, with waist-length black hair and warm, honeyed skin. She wore the uniform befitting her rank and title, a long white coat with a high collar and bell-shaped sleeves, embroidered along the hems with runes and hieroglyphs that meant nothing to Kai. 5 paces behind her stood her ever-present, ever-silent guard. He was a young man as handsome as Sybil was beautiful, with blonde hair pulled into a low ponytail and sharp features that Kai had yet to see an expression on. Sybil's lips curved as Kai and Torin approached, but her gray eyes remained cold.
Your Imperial Highness, she said with a graceful dip of her head. How fares the Honorable Emperor Ryken?
When Kai didn't respond, Torin answered.
Not well. Thank you for your concern.
I am most displeased to hear that.
She sounded about as displeased as a cat who just cornered a mouse.
My mistress sends her condolences and a wish for a speedy recovery.
She fixed her eyes on the prince, and her image seemed to shudder before him like a mirage. Whispers filled his head. Respect and admiration, compassion and concern. Kai tore his gaze from her, silencing the voices. It took a moment for his racing pulse to steady. What do you want? He said. Sybil gestured toward the elevators.
A word with the man who will soon be emperor, should the fates deem it so.
Kai glanced at Torin, but the face that met him was unsympathetic. Tact, diplomacy. Always, especially when it came to the cursed Lunars. Sighing, he half turned to the waiting android. Third floor. The sensors flashed. Please proceed to elevator C, Your Highness. They boarded the elevator, Sybil floating into it like a feather upon a breeze. The guard entered last, staying by the door and facing the three of them, as if the thaumaturge were in mortal danger. His icy gaze made Kai uncomfortable, but Sybil seemed to forget the guard was even there.
This is a tragic time for His Majesty to fall ill, she said.
Kai gripped the rail and faced her, pressing his hatred into the polished wood. Would next month have been more convenient for you? Her patience didn't falter.
I speak, of course, of the alliance discussions my mistress has been engaged in with Emperor Ryken. We are most eager for an agreement that will suit both Luna and the Commonwealth.
Watching her made him feel dizzy, off balance. So he tore his gaze away and watched the numbers above the doors descend. My father has been attempting to secure an alliance with Queen Lavanna since she first took the throne. She has always declined.
He has yet to meet her sensible demands.
Kai locked his teeth. Sybil continued.
My hope is that, as Emperor, you will be better able to see reason, Your Highness.
Kai was silent as the elevator passed floor 6, 5, 4. My father is a wise man. At this time, I have no intention of altering any of his previous decisions. I do hope we will be able to come to an agreement, but I'm afraid your mistress will need to lower her very sensible demands. Sybil's smile had frozen on her face.
Well, she said as the doors opened to the third floor. You are young.
He dipped his head, pretending she'd given him a compliment, then faced Torin. If you have a minute to spare, perhaps you could walk with me to Dr. Erlon's office. You may have questions I've not thought of.
Of course, Your Highness.
Neither of them acknowledged the thaumaturge or her guard as they left the elevator, but Kai heard her sugared voice behind them.
Long live the Emperor, before the doors shut.
He growled.
We should have her incarcerated. A lunar ambassador? That's hardly a show of peace. It's better treatment than they would give us, he raked a hand through his hair. Gah, lunars.
Realizing that Torin had stopped following, Kai dropped his hand and turned around. Torin's gaze was heavy, worried.
What? I know this is a difficult time for you.
Kai felt his hackles rise in self-defense and tried to nudge them back down. This is a difficult time for everyone.
Eventually, Your Highness, we will have to discuss Queen Lavanna and what you intend to do about her. It would be wise to have a plan.
Kai stepped closer to Torin, ignoring a group of lab technicians that were forced to swarm around them.
I have a plan. My plan is to not marry her. Diplomacy be damned. There, end of discussion.
Torin's jaw flexed.
Don't look at me like that. She would destroy us.
Kai lowered his voice.
She would turn us into slaves. I know, Your Highness.
His sympathetic eyes diffused Kai's mounting anger.
Please believe me when I say I would not ask it of you. Just as I never asked it of your father.
Kai backed away and slumped against the corridor wall. Scientists bustled past in their white coats. Android treads whirred on the linoleum. But if anyone noticed the prince and his advisor, they didn't show it.
All right, I'm listening, he said. What's our plan?
Your Highness, this is not the place.
No, you have my attention.
Please. Give me something to think about other than this stupid disease.
Torin took a calculated breath.
I don't think we need to rewrite our foreign affairs policy. We'll follow your father's example. For now, we'll hold out for a peace agreement, a treaties.
And if she won't sign it? What if she gets tired of waiting and decides to follow through on her threats? Can you imagine a war right now with the plague and the economy and...
She would destroy us, and she knows that. If she wanted to start a war, she would have done it by now.
Unless she's just biding her time, waiting for us to get so weak we won't have any choice but to surrender.
Kai scratched at the back of his neck, watching the bustle of the corridor. Everyone's so busy, so determined in their search for an antidote. If there were an antidote.
He sighed. I should have married. If I'd already married, Queen Levana wouldn't even be an issue. She'd have to sign a peace treaty, if she wanted peace.
At Torn's silence, he forced himself to look back at the advisor, surprised to find a rare warmth in his face.
Perhaps you'll meet a girl at the festival, said Torrin. Have a whirlwind romance, a happily ever after, and have no more worries for the rest of your days.
Kai tried to glare at him, but couldn't maintain it. Torrin so rarely joked.
Brilliant idea. Why didn't I think of it?
He turned, bracing his shoulder against the wall, and folded his arms over his chest.
Actually, maybe there's one option that you and my father haven't considered yet. Something that's been on my mind lately.
Do tell, Your Highness.
He lowered his voice.
Lately, I've been doing a little research.
He paused before proceeding.
On the lunar air.
Torrin's eyes widened.
Your Highness, just hear me out, Kai said,
raising his hands to silence Torrin before he could be chastised. He already knew what Torrin would say. Princess Selene, Queen Levana's niece, was dead. She had died in a fire 13 years ago. There was no lunar heir.
There are rumors every day, Kai continued. Sightings, people claiming they helped her, theories.
Yes, we've all heard the theories. You know as well as I there's no substance to them.
But what if they're true?
Kai crossed his arms and ducked his head toward Torrin, voice trailing to a whisper.
What if there's a girl out there who could usurp Levana? Someone even stronger?
Are you listening to yourself? Someone stronger than Levana?
You mean someone like her sister, who had her favorite seamstress's feet chopped off so she would have nothing better to do than sit and make her fine dresses?
We're not talking about Queen Channery.
No, we're talking about her daughter. Kai, the entire bloodline, every last one of them has been greedy, violent, corrupted by their own power. It's in their blood. Believe me when I say that Princess Selene, even if she were alive, would be no better.
Kai realized his arms were aching from squeezing them so hard, his skin gone white around his fingertips. She can't very well be worse, he said. And who knows, if the rumors are right, and she has been on Earth all this time, maybe she would be different. Maybe she would be sympathetic to us.
You're basing this wishful thinking on rumors.
They never found a body.
Torn pursed his lips in a thin line.
They found what was left of one.
It couldn't hurt to do some research, could it? Said Kai,
beginning to feel desperate. His heart had been set on the idea for so long. His research harbored so close to his heart. He couldn't bear to think it had all been just wishful thinking, although the possibility had always lingered in the back of his mind.
Yes, it could hurt, said Torrin. If Levana were to find out you were considering this, it would destroy our chance at procuring a treaty. We shouldn't even be talking about this here. It's dangerous.
Now who's listening to rumors?
Your Highness, this is the end of this discussion. Your objective right now must be to prevent a war, not worrying about phantom lunar princesses.
What if I can't prevent it?
Torrin opened his palms, looking weary after the argument.
Then the Union will fight.
Right. Excellent plan. I'm so comforted now that we've had this talk. He turned away and marched blindly toward the labs. Sure, the Earthen Union would fight, but against Luna, they would lose.
Chapter 13
Your control panel is marvelously complex. Some of the highest technology I've ever seen in a cyborg.
Dr. Erland spun the holograph one way and then the other.
And look at this wiring along your spine. It melds almost perfectly with your central nervous system. Pristine workmanship. And, look here!
He pointed to the holograph's pelvis.
Your reproductive system is almost untouched. You know, lots of female cyborgs are left infertile because of the invasive procedures, but from the looks of it, I don't suspect you will have any problems.
Cinder sat on one of the exam tables, chin settled atop both palms. Lucky me. The doctor wagged a finger at her.
You should be grateful your surgeons took such care.
I'm sure I'll feel much more grateful when I find a guy who thinks complex wiring in a girl is a turn-on. She kicked her heels against the metal base of the table. Does this have anything to do with my immunity?
Maybe, maybe not.
The doctor took a pair of spectacles from his pocket and slid them onto his face, still staring at the holograph. Cinder tilted her head. Don't they pay you enough for corrective eye surgery?
I like the way these feel.
Dr. Erlon dragged the holograph down, revealing the inside of Cinder's head.
Speaking of eye surgery, do you realize you're missing tear ducts?
What, really? And I thought I was just emotionally withdrawn. She pulled her feet up, hugging her knees. I'm also incapable of blushing, if that was going to be your next brilliant observation. He turned around, his eyes magnified behind their spectacles.
Incapable of blushing? How so?
My brain monitors my body temperature, forces me to cool down if I get too warm, too fast. I guess just sweating like a normal human being wasn't enough. Dr. Erland pulled his port screen out, punched something in.
That's really quite smart, he muttered. They must have been worried about your system overheating.
Cinder strained her neck, but couldn't see the little screen on his port. Is that important? He ignored her.
And look at your heart, he said, gesturing at the holograph again. These two chambers are made primarily of silicon, mixed with bio-tissue. Amazing.
Cinder pressed her hand against her chest. Her heart. Her brain. Her nervous system. What hadn't been tampered with? Her hand moved to her neck, tracing the ridges of her spine as her gaze traveled over the metal vertebrae, those metallic invaders. What's this? She asked, stretching forward and pointing at a shadow on the diagram.
Ah, yes. My assistants and I were discussing that earlier.
Dr. Erland scratched his head through the hat.
It looks to be made of a different material than the vertebrae, and it's right over a central cluster of nerves. Perhaps it was meant to correct a glitch.
Cinder wrinkled her nose. Great. I have glitches.
Has your neck ever bothered you?
Only when I've been under a hover all day.
And when I'm dreaming.
In her nightmare, the fire always seemed to be hottest beneath her neck, the heat trickling down her spine. The unrelenting pain, like a hot coal had gotten beneath her skin. She shuddered, remembering Peony in last night's dream, crying and screaming, blaming Cinder for what had become of her. Dr. Erland was watching her, tapping his port screen against his lips. Cinder squirmed.
I have a question.
Yes, said the doctor, pocketing the screen. You said before that I wasn't contagious after my body got rid of those microbes.
That's correct.
So, if I had contracted the plague naturally, say, a couple days ago, how long before I was no longer contagious?
Dr. Erland puckered his lips. Well, one can imagine that your body is more efficient at ridding itself of the carriers every time it comes in contact with them. So, if it took 20 minutes to defeat them all this time, I would think it would have taken an hour the time before that. Two at the most. Hard to say, of course, given that every disease and every body works a little differently.
Cinder folded her hands in her lap.
It had taken a little more than an hour to walk home from the market. What about... can it cling to, say, clothing?
Only briefly. The pathogens can't survive long without a host.
He frowned at her. Are you all right? She fiddled with the fingers of her gloves, nodded. When do we get to start saving lives?
Dr. Erland adjusted his hat.
I'm afraid we can't do much until I've had a chance to analyze your blood samples and map your DNA sequencing. But first, I wanted to get a better grasp of your body makeup in case it could affect the results.
Being cyborg can't change your DNA, can it?
No, but there have been studies suggesting that human bodies develop different hormones, chemical imbalances, antibodies, that sort of thing, as a result of the operations. Of course, the more invasive the procedure, the more...
You think it has something to do with my immunity? Being cyborg?
The doctor's eyes glowed, giddy, unnerving cinder.
Not exactly, he said. But, like I said before, I do have a theory or two.
Were you planning on sharing any of those theories with me?
Oh, yes. Once I know I am correct, I plan on sharing my discovery with the world. In fact, I have had a thought about the mystery shadow on your spine. Would you mind if I tried something?
He took off the spectacles and slid them back into his pocket, beside the port screen.
What are you gonna do?
Just a little experiment, nothing to worry about. She twisted her head as Dr. Erland walked around the table and placed the tips of his fingers on her neck, pinching the vertebrae just above her shoulders. She stiffened at the touch. His hands were warm, but she shivered anyway.
Tell me if you feel anything... unusual.
Cinder opened her mouth, about to announce that any human touch felt unusual, but her breath hiccuped. Fire and pain ruptured through her spine, flooding her veins. She cried out and fell off the table, crumpling to the floor. Chapter 14. Red light pierced her eyelids. Going haywire, her retina display was sending a skein of green gibberish against the backdrop of her lids. Something was wrong with her wiring. Her left fingers kept twitching, pulsing uncontrollably.
Come down, Miss Lin. You're perfectly all right.
This voice, calm and unsympathetic in its strange accent, was followed by one much more panicked.
Perfectly all right? Are you crazy? What happened to her?
Cinder groaned. Only a little experiment. She's going to be fine, Your Highness. See? She's waking up now. Another strangled protest before she could pry her eyes open. The lab's whiteness would have blinded her, but for the two shadows cutting through it. Her eyes focused the shapes into Dr. Erlon's wool hat and sky blue eyes, and Prince Kai with strands of black hair hanging unkempt across his brow. As the retina display began running the basic diagnostic tests for the second time that day, she shut her eyes again, faintly worried that Prince Kai would notice the green light at the base of her pupil. At least she had her gloves on.
Are you alive? Kai said, pushing her mussed hair back from her forehead.
His fingers felt hot and clammy against her skin, before she realized that she was the one who was feverish. Which shouldn't have been possible. She couldn't blush. Couldn't have a fever. Couldn't overheat. What had the doctor done to her?
Did she hit her head? Kai asked.
The twitching stopped. Cinder pressed her hands against her body in an instinctual effort to hide them.
Oh, she's fine, Dr. Erland said again. Had a bit of a scare. But no harm done. I am sorry for that, Miss Lin. I didn't realize you would be so sensitive.
What did you do?
She said, careful not to slur her words. Kai slipped an arm beneath her and helped her sit up. She flinched against him and tugged down her pant leg in case the metal gleam of her shin was visible.
I was merely adjusting your spine.
Cinder squinted at the doctor, not needing the little orange light to tell her he was lying. But it popped up anyway.
What's wrong with her spine?
Kai's hand slid down to her lower back. Cinder sucked in a breath, a shiver racing along her skin. She feared the pain would come back, that the prince's touch would somehow override her system like Dr. Erland's had. But nothing happened, and soon Kai lessened the pressure of his touch.
"Nothing is wrong with it," said Dr. Erland, "but the spinal region is where many of our nerves congregate before sending messages up to our brains."
Cinder watched Dr. Erland with wild eyes. She could already imagine how quickly Kai would pull away from her when the doctor told him he was supporting a cyborg.
Miss Lin was complaining of a bothersome pain in her neck.
She squeezed her fists together until her fingers began to ache.
"And so I gave her a bit of an adjustment. It's called chiropractic, a very old practice and yet amazingly effective. She must have been more out of alignment than I realized, and so the sudden realigning of the vertebrae created a temporary shock to her system."
He grinned at the prince, eyes devoid of concern. The orange light persisted. Cinder gaped, waiting for the doctor to continue, to move past his inane lie and start telling the prince all of her secrets. She was a cyborg. She was immune to the plague. She was his new favorite guinea pig. But Dr. Erland said nothing else, only smiled at her with mischievous eyes that filled her with suspicion. Feeling Kai's gaze upon her, Cinder turned to him, meaning to shrug as if Dr. Erland's explanation made no more sense to her than it did to him. But the intensity of Prince Kai's gaze snatched away her words.
"I hope he's telling me the truth, because it would be a shame for you to die when we've just had the pleasure of meeting."
His eyes glinted, as if sharing a secret joke, and she forced the fakest laugh she'd ever heard from her own lips. "Are you all right?" he said, taking her hand into his, one arm still around her back. "Can you stand?"
"I think so."
He helped her to her feet. Not a sign of the excruciating pain remained.
"Thank you."
She backed away from him, brushing herself off, even though the lab floor was immaculate. Her thigh bumped the exam table.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked, hands falling to his sides and hanging awkwardly for a second before finding their way into his pockets. Cinder opened her mouth, but was interrupted by Dr. Erland clearing his throat.
"You two have met?"
he asked, bushy eyebrows disappearing into his cap. Kai answered,
"We met yesterday, at the market."
Cinder shoved her hands into her pockets, mirroring Kai, and discovered the wrench.
"I'm, here, because,
"One of the medroids was acting up, Your Highness," interrupted Dr. Erland. "I requested that she come take a look at it. Her mechanic business has exceptional ratings."
Kai began to nod, but stopped and scanned the room.
"What medroid?"
"It isn't here anymore, of course," said Dr. Erland, his voice chipper, as if lying were a fun game. "It's probably off drawing blood as we speak."
Right, said Cinder, forcing her jaw to stop hanging open like an idiot's. "I already fixed it. Good as new."
She pulled out the wrench and twirled it over her fingers like hard evidence. Though Kai appeared confused, he nodded as if the story wasn't worth questioning. Cinder was grateful that the doctor had so easily devised a story, but it also unnerved her. What reason did he have to keep secrets from the Crown Prince, especially when he could be nearing a breakthrough on plague research? Didn't Kai deserve to know about it? Didn't everyone?
"I don't suppose you've had a chance to look at Nancy?" Kai asked.
Cinder stopped twirling the wrench and clutched it with both hands to keep herself from fidgeting.
No, not yet. I'm sorry, it's been the last 24 hours.
He shrugged her words away, but the gesture was stiff on him.
"You probably have a client list a mile long. I shouldn't expect royal treatment."
His mouth twitched. "Although, I guess I do anyway." Cinder's heart tripped as his grin caught her by surprise, every bit as charming and unexpected as it had been at the market. Then, her eye spotted the holograph behind him, still showing her inner workings, from the metal vertebrae
to her bunched wires, to her perfectly intact ovaries. She snapped her gaze back to Kai, pulse racing.
I promise to take a look at it as soon as I can, before the festival, definitely.
Kai turned, following her gaze to the holograph. Cinder squeezed her fists together, nerves twisting in the base of her stomach, as Kai recoiled from the image. A girl. A machine. A freak. She bit her lip, resigning herself to never receiving another of the prince's heart-stopping smiles, when Dr. Erland stepped toward the holograph and turned the net screen off with a flick.
My apologies, Your Highness. Patient confidentiality. That was from today's draft subject.
Another lie. Cinder strangled the wrench, equal parts gratitude and suspicion filling her.
Kai shook off his surprise. That's actually why I came down here. I was wondering if you've made any progress.
Hard to say at this point, Your Highness, but we may have found a potential lead. I'll, of course, keep you posted on any developments.
He smiled innocently, first at Kai, then at Cinder. The look was clear. He would not tell Kai anything. She just couldn't understand why. Clearing her throat, Cinder backed toward the exit.
I should go then. Let you get back to work, she said, tapping the wrench against her palm. I guess, I'll be back to make sure the med is performing properly. Say, tomorrow?
Perfect, said the doctor. I also have your ID number in case I ever need to find you.
His smile darkened, just barely, as if to say that Cinder's volunteer status would only last so long as she did return voluntarily. She was valuable now. He had no intention of letting her walk out forever.
I'll see you out, said the prince, flashing his wrist by the scanner. The door breezed open.
Cinder held up her gloved hands, the wrench locked in her grip.
No, that's fine. I can find my way.
Are you sure? It's no trouble.
Yes, positive. I'm sure you have very important royal government research things to discuss. But thank you, Your Highness.
She attempted an awkward bow, glad that at least this time she had both feet firmly attached.
All right. Well, it was nice to see you again. A pleasant surprise.
She laughed ironically, surprised to find his expression serious, his eyes warm upon her, and a little curious.
You too.
She backed out the door, smiling, trembling, praying there were no grease spots on her face.
I'll come you, then, when your android is ready.
Thank you, Lin Mei.
You can call me Sin...
The door shut between them.
Der.
Cinder would be fine, Your Highness. She sagged against the corridor wall, thumping her knuckles against her forehead.
I'll calm you. You can call me Cinder,
she mimicked, then bit down on her lip.
Don't mind the babbling girl.
He was the fantasy of every girl in the country. He was so far out of her realm, her world, that she should have stopped thinking about him the second the door had closed. Should stop thinking about him immediately. Should never think about him again, except maybe as a client, and her prince. And yet, the memory of his fingers against her skin refused to fade. Chapter 15. Cinder had to download a map of the palace's research wing to find her way to the exit. Her nerves were on edge, with the prince, with Peony, with everything. She felt like an imposter roaming the slick white halls with her head bent, avoiding eye contact with the scientists and white-plated androids, even if she really was a volunteer now, a valuable one. She passed a waiting room, complete with two net screens and three cushioned chairs, and froze, her gaze catching on the window. The view. The city. From ground level, New Beijing was a mess. Too many buildings crammed into too little space,
the streets untended, power lines and clotheslines strung across every alley, intruding vines scurrying up every concrete wall. But from here, atop the cliff and three stories up, the city was beautiful. The sun was high, and its light sang off of glass skyscrapers and gold-tinted roofs. Cinder could see the constant movement of huge net screens and flashing hovers as they darted between the buildings. From here, the city hummed with life, but without all the techno-chatter. Cinder sought out the cluster of slender blue glass and chrome buildings that stood sentry over the market square, then tried to trace the roads north, searching for the Phoenix Tower apartments, but they were tucked behind too much city and too many shadows. Her awe slipped away. She had to go back. Back to the apartment. Back to her prison. She had to fix Kai's android. She had to protect Aiko, who wouldn't last a week before Audrey got the idea in her head to dismantle her for scrap metal, or worse, replace her faulty personality chip. She'd been complaining about the android being too opinionated since the day Cinder had come to live with her. Besides, she had nowhere else to go. Until Dr. Erland was able to figure out how to deposit the payment into Cinder's account without Audrey finding out, she had no money and no hover. And her only human friend was a prisoner herself in the quarantines. She balled her fists. She had to go back. But she wouldn't stay long. Audrey had made it quite clear that she saw Cinder as worthless, a burden. She had no qualms dismissing her when she found a lucrative means to do it, a way that could keep her free of guilt because, after all, they needed to find an antidote. Peony needed an antidote. And maybe she'd been right to do it. Maybe it was Cinder's duty as a cyborg to sacrifice herself so all the normal humans could be cured. Maybe it did make sense to use the ones who had already been tampered with. But Cinder knew she would never forgive Audrey for it. The woman was supposed to be the one to protect her, to help her. If Audrey and Pearl were her only family left, she would be better off alone. She had to get away, and she knew just how she was going to do it. The look on Audrey's face when Cinder entered the apartment almost made the whole ghastly ordeal worthwhile. She'd been sitting on the sofa, reading on her port screen. Pearl was at the far end of the room, playing a holographic board game in which the game pieces were modeled after the girl's favorite celebrities, including three Prince Kai lookalikes. It had long been her and Peony's favorite, but Pearl was now battling strangers over the net and looked both bored and miserable about it. When Cinder walked in, both Pearl and Audrey gaped at her, and a miniature version of the prince fell onto his virtual opponent's longsword. Pearl paused the game too late. "Cinder," said Audrey, setting her port screen on a side table. "How are you?" "They ran some tests and decided I wasn't what they wanted, so they sent me back." Cinder pulled up a tight-lipped smile. "Don't worry, I'm sure they'll still recognize your noble sacrifice. Maybe they'll send you a thank you, Com." Eyeing Cinder with disbelief, Audrey stood. "They can't send you back!" Cinder peeled off her gloves and stuffed them into her pocket. "You'll have to file an official complaint, I guess. So sorry to barge in, I can see you are very busy running your household. If you'll excuse me, I'd better go try to earn my keep so you might actually blink an eye the next time you find a convenient way to get rid of me." She marched into the hallway. Aiko was poking her shiny head out of the kitchen, her blue sensor bright with astonishment. Cinder was amazed at how quickly her emotion switched from bitter to relieved. For a time, she'd thought she would never see Aiko again. The momentary joy faded when Audrey bustled into the hallway behind her. "Cinder, stop!" Though tempted to ignore her, Cinder did stop and turn back to face her guardian. They stared at each other, Audrey's jaw working as she stumbled over her surprise. She looked old, years older than she had before.
"I will be contacting the research facility to check your story and make sure you aren't lying about this," she said. If you did something, if you ruined this one chance I had to help my daughter...
The anger in Audrey's voice broke, then rose into shrill yelling. Cinder could hear her burying tears beneath her words.
You cannot be that useless!
She pulled her shoulders back, gripping the door jamb.
What else do you want me to do?
Cinder yelled back, flailing her hands.
Fine, contact the researchers. I didn't do anything wrong. I went there, they ran some tests, and they didn't want me. I'm so sorry if they didn't ship me home in a cardboard box, if that's what you were hoping for.
Audrey pulled her lips taut.
Your position in this household has not changed, and I do not appreciate being spoken to in such a disrespectful manner by the orphan that I accepted into my home.
Really? Said Cinder. Would you like me to list all the things I didn't appreciate being done to me today? I've had needles poked at me, and prongs stuck in my head, and poisonous microbes. She caught herself, not wanting Audrey to know the truth, her true value.
Honestly, I don't care so much what you do and don't appreciate right now. You're the one who betrayed me, when I've never done anything to you. That is enough. You know very well what you've done to me, to this family. Garen's death wasn't my fault.
She turned her head away, angry white spots flecking in her vision.
Fine, said Audrey, her voice losing none of its superiority. So you've returned. Welcome home, Cinder. But so long as you continue to live in my home, you will continue to obey my orders. Do you understand?
Cinder planted her cyborg hand against the wall, fingers splayed out, grounding herself.
Obey your orders. Right, like, do the chores, Cinder. Get a job so I can pay my bills, Cinder.